with you again. Let me give you a warning. I came in a little bit under the weather, so I came in this morning just waving, not shaking hands. I don't want to spread it. And then I saw that nice dispenser back there, so I'm availing myself to that a lot. But if you would rather just wave instead of shake hands, that is absolutely fine with me. I'd like to share the word here. I'd like not to share any germs. All right, Genesis 2:18 and 14. We talked about this, and we're going to be in this lesson be focusing mostly on husbands. Then we're also going to spend a while just on fidelity, the importance of honoring the marriage and being true to it, and that'll apply to both husbands and wives. Tonight, we'll be talking mostly about wives, and then we're going to talk about communication within the marriage, and that will apply a lot to both husbands and wives. But we already talked this morning about leave and cleave. For this reason, shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they two shall become one flesh. So that's a new family, and that needs to be respected. You know, in-laws can maybe be gone to for some advice and some help and some things sometimes, but that's a new family. Every once in a while, you'll see a situation where the in-laws from one side or the other are trying to control things and manipulate and just have their nose too much in it. This is a new family. There needs to be leaving and cleaving. And young men, take it seriously. In other words, when you start your own family, don't be going to your dad and having him, you know, do this and fix that and do everything else. There might be occasions where you work on a project together. That's great, but it's about growing up and doing that. And part of it is supplying for physical needs. So, for example, look at the curses in Genesis chapter 3. There will certainly be some overlap in marriage. Overlap's important. But it's also noticeable, especially when you look at the curses, the general realm of the man's role is seen in the curses, as seen in the curses, and the general role of the woman's role as seen in the curses. So, starting in verse 13 of Genesis chapter 3, then the Lord said, "What is this that you have done?" The woman said, "The serpent deceived me, and I ate." The Lord God said to the serpent, "Because you have done this, cursed are you above all livestock and above the beasts of the field. On your belly you shall go, and in the dust you shall eat all the days of your life. I'll put enmity between you and the woman, between your offspring and her offspring, and he shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel." There's the curse on the serpent. To the woman, he said, "I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing. In pain you will bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." To the man, he said, "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree at which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat of the plants of the field. For by the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you are taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Do you notice the curses on the woman tended to revolve around what? Her domestic relationship within the family. In pain, you know, would be multiplied to her in childbirth and her submission to her husband. The curses on the man tended to relate especially to what? You're going to have to work, and there's going to be problems to even survive and provide the food. Now, that doesn't mean, as we said, and we'll see this more later, you get to the worthy woman in Proverbs chapter 31. She's a multifaceted individual, and she's doing different things. But we live in a culture in which it tries to pretend that men and women are the same, and anything that a man should do, a woman should do. Anything that a woman should do, it's okay for little boys to do. Gender is really, really important. And we want to start with just noticing that the responsibility here of providing for the family falls chiefly where? On the man. And the responsibility to domestically focused, and especially going back to Titus chapter 2, what did it tell the older women to train the young women to do? Not how to make more and more money, but what? Older women train the younger women to do what? Love your husbands. Love your children, etc. But if a man thinks that he's done the will of God because he brought home the bacon, and he can just go down and sit in his lazy boy, and, you know, he's home from work, he's done. No, because he's also to provide, among other things, for spiritual leadership. So let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Let's start verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. You might recall that this is the verse that Jesus quotes when he's asked in Matthew 22, what is the greatest commandment? Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. What's the second greatest commandment? Leviticus 19, love your neighbor as yourself. But this text goes on to say what in verse 7? You shall, and these words, excuse me, back in verse 6, these words that I command you shall be on your hearts. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise. This needs to be part of life. We need to be teaching our children. It's really vital. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. After telling children to obey their parents, it's fathers in particular, notice in this text, that are charged with the following. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord. It doesn't say just make sure to take them to Bible class. Fathers, we are charged with raising up our children, nurturing them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord. So you see that spiritual leadership. And the man has leadership generally in the family. Look at verse 25. Well, let's start actually with verse 24, 22. This is Ephesians 5, verse 22. Wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, being himself the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives also be to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. So the husband is the head of the house. And, you know, guys, we could just stop there and say, okay, that's a good reminder. We're in charge. And we could take that in a very selfish way. And if you want to see the type of selfishness that can be employed by a father taking that in a selfish way, all you got to do is look at politicians or kings or that type of thing. Have there been kings that use their position just to better themselves, crush the people, get whatever they need out of the people just so they can, you know, coat their coats with gold or whatever? Yeah, there's kings. Are those the best kind of kings? Or is the better king the king that thinks about what's good for his country? Well, it says that he's the head, but we want to notice a couple things here. First is, it's the wife that is told to submit. It's not addressed to the husband. It doesn't say, husbands, make your wife submit. That's not what the text says, is it? It's addressed to the wife. Wife, submit to your husband. It's her duty to accept and recognize and honor the leadership of the husband. That's on her. What's on the husband? Look at the text. In other words, what verbs are used for the man and woman? For the man, it's this: husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. Jesus sacrificed himself. And so the man's leadership in the family is to be a sacrificial leadership. So instead of just saying, you know, okay, this is my chair, this is my remote, this is my ball game, this is what I want for supper, this is what we're doing, that's coming at things from a selfish standpoint. What does a sacrificial leader do? A sacrificial leader will be willing to give up things for the benefit of his wife, for the benefit of his children. Husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church and died for it. Sacrificed himself for it. The text is, gave himself up for it. I don't know where I put the little clicker. Oh, there it is. Next chart. We've already gone over this one. But want to focus on this part. Husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it. Have you ever, in your marriage, gotten in this type of situation? You're kind of irritated with her. She's kind of irritated with you. In fact, maybe the reason you're irritated with you is because she's kind of irritated with you. And irritation breeds irritation. And then she does that thing that annoys you, and then she's annoyed because you've been doing this, and you start to feel what? Distant. And you start, we can start to look at our spouse as that woman over there. And if she would be more like this, or if she would be more like that, or if she wouldn't do that, or if she wouldn't say that, then things would be better. Of course, what's the woman thinking? She's thinking a lot of the same things, except in reverse. That man is the problem. If he wouldn't be like this, if he wouldn't talk like that, if he wouldn't use that tone of voice, if he wouldn't, that's the problem. Why can't he be different from that? If you've never had that come in, very good. I've been guilty of that plenty of times. And one of the problems is what? How are we viewing our spouse at that point? That other person over there. Well, one thing we need to do is examine ourselves more. All of us are better off when we do more examining of ourselves than other people. You know what's always easy for us? Examining other people and not ourselves, which is why Matthew 7 says what? You know, you got a beam in your own eye and you're focusing on the mote somewhere else. But this is saying husbands should love their wives as their own body. Because what did it say back in Genesis 2:24? For this reason, the man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they become one. The more we will look at ourselves as one, that we're a unit, we're a team, we're a couple, we're together, then we start looking at that differently, don't we? Sewell Hall once put it this way. He said, if my body says to my head, I'm cold, my head doesn't say, too bad. My head responds, it finds a sweater or a jacket and puts it on. So the husband is the head, the wife is, but it's one. Instead of in being competition or in conflict, care about each other. nourish, and no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it. I like to play ball and get some exercise. And everybody that knows me knows that before I can play ball, I have to stretch my toe because I got issues with that foot. Years ago, I went to see a doctor, and he said, oh, that's bad. And he said we could do some surgery, but that tendon is always going to be short. And it is. And I had the surgery, but that tendon is short. So my toe just doesn't bend much. There had been some bone buildup on the top here, and it was just bad. So they cut off the bone, but that tendon is short, and my right toe will not go up very much just on its own. So if I were to run one block, my foot would start swelling up. So before I play ball, you know what I do? I stretch that toe. I put a strap on there. I start bringing it back, and I stretch that tendon for a bit. After I get done, then the tendon is ready to go. Now I can play volleyball or I can play basketball. Now, would I like it if my toe didn't have that problem? Sure. And over the years, it's actually gotten much better. So I'm glad of that. But it's still not the way a toe should be, and it's just something that I have to live with. But why do I put up with that toe? It's my toe! And I'm thankful that I can stretch it and stretch that tendon and then use that foot. And I appreciate that. But because my toe has a problem, I spend time nourishing and cherishing that toe so that it can do what it needs to do. It would be pretty foolish if I were to get a chainsaw and I'm tired of that toe and just take it off. And I'm not going to do that. Why? No man ever hated his own flesh, but did what? Nourishes and cherishes it. Well, in this text, what's his own flesh? His wife. One, stress and strife are going to come up in marriage. It's a very close relationship. And when you have things really close to each other, it can cause some friction. But we need to realize and honor the fact that this is a union, that we are one, and care about that other one. All right, let's proceed. Wives are told to submit to their husbands as to the Lord. As the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and is himself the Savior of the body, so now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Now, I want you to think here about love and respect, and books have been written on this topic and everything, and not everybody's the same, so you might react a little bit differently, but most of you are probably going to react as is typical for your gender on this question. Here's the question that I'm going to ask you. I want you to imagine that you have two buttons there, and if you push one, you get that, but you don't get the other one. Now, most people would like to have both buttons. Do you want your family to love you? Yes. Do you want your family to respect you? Yes. The scenario for this question, and it makes a point, and it's reflected, I think, in Ephesians 5, I want you to pick which of those is more important to you. Let's say you can't have both. If you push the love button, nobody respects you. Your parents don't respect you. Your spouse doesn't respect you. Your kids don't respect you. Your boss doesn't respect you. Nobody respects you, but everybody loves you. If you push the respect button, everybody respects you. Your neighbors respect you. Your parents respect you. Your wife respects you. Your kid, nobody loves you. Your wife doesn't love you. Your kids don't love you. Nobody loves you, but everybody respects you. Imagine you had to push one of those buttons. Which one would you push? Think about that for a few seconds. It will vary on occasion, but most of the time, women choose the love button. It's not that they don't want to be respected. They want to be respected, But it's just devastating to think of nobody loving them. That's just too empty of a hole. But you know what most men pick? And you might have picked differently. But most men, I see you had an idea, most men would put the respect button. Is it that you don't want to be loved? No. But it's just so undermining that nobody would respect you. So men, psychologically and emotionally, this has a higher value generally, and women, this has a higher value. Now with that in mind, look at what Paul said in Ephesians 5. There are other passages that talk about giving honor to the woman and passages about loving the husband. But in Ephesians 5, what did it say? Wives, submit to the husband as unto the Lord. What does submission show? It shows respect. When you follow someone else's leadership, when you look to them as the leader, and when you submit to that honorably and gladly, doesn't that show respect? Yes, it does. And that fits a basic psychological important quotient for man. But what did it tell the husband to do? It said, love your wife like Christ loved the church. On this side, wives, obey your husband like the church obeys Christ. But husbands, love your wife the way Christ loved the church and sacrificed himself for it. Nourish and cherish it. This fits a basic psychological need and principle that's very common between men and women. To the husband, love her. To the wife, follow him. And a question you might ask yourself, husbands, wives, does my wife feel loved? Or wife, you might ask yourself, does my husband feel respected? And I'm not asking, are they loved or are they respected? Do they feel loved? Do they feel respected? If they don't, give yourself an assignment. Whose job, gentlemen, whose job is it to make sure your wife feels loved? That's your job. Whose wife is it, ladies, to make sure your husband feels respected? You are the one to be in submission to him. You show him that respect. So if in your union your wife doesn't really feel loved, start acting a way to help her feel more loved. If he doesn't feel really respected, start acting in a way to make him feel more respect. The beautiful thing is that these things build off of each other and strengthen and get better. Husbands, remembering your vows. A lot of you probably said vows similar to the rest of us. And I want us to go back and think about those for a minute. So, for instance, were we asked, do you take this woman to love and protect, to honor and cherish? Was that in your wedding vows? And what did we say at the end? We said, you remember? We said, I do. These are important things. And we said it in front of God. And we said it in front of our wife. And we said it in front of her mom and her dad, if they were there. And we said, we were going to love her and honor her and cherish her. 1 Peter 3 tells the husband what? Give honor to the woman. Do we do that? If we don't, then we need to get back to doing that. Because you know what we did when we got married? We promised that we would. And even if it wasn't in your vows, if you say, no, I don't remember saying that, so I don't have to do that. Well, yes, you do, because what did we just read in Ephesians 5? No man ever hates his own flesh, but honors and cherishes it. And your own flesh is your wife. To honor her, 1 Peter 3. And then, you remember this line? To have and to hold and to keep yourself to her and her alone. That's a very, very important thing. And I want to talk about this on two levels. One, not just committing adultery, but mentally and visually. So I'm going to tell you, and I don't want to talk about it too graphically, but I don't want to go through this week and not address it, because it is an epidemic in our country. Pornography is epidemic in this country, and it is far too widespread among believers and in the church. Every summer, I get the privilege of working with a number of young men, and they'll be good young men from good families. And every summer, the problem that a lot of those young men have is pornography. Like one young man said to me, he said, my dad gave me this smartphone for my birthday. I wish he had never given it to me. To give you an idea, just statistically or so, years ago, the average introduction to internet pornography was age 11. Now, I'm pretty sure it's earlier than that. I've taught on this for a lot of years and then would still have sometimes parents say, oh, I didn't know it was going to be a problem yet. Imagine being a young boy and being given an electronic device where you can find anything on there within a couple of clicks. It tears people up. I'm afraid sometimes there's fathers that will think, well, when I was a kid, you know, there were some dirty magazines, we saw some pictures, it wasn't good, but boys will be boys. Please don't think that. Please don't have that attitude. For one thing, those magazines shouldn't have been being looked at, but secondly, the pornography, internet pornography today is much, much more addictive and destructive than the indecent, vile pornography and pictures that used to be years ago that somebody had in a magazine hidden under a bed somewhere. It's, you're seeing a person in action. If it's webcams, there's live interaction. And when fellas start getting themselves addicted to it, then they need something worse, and something worse, and something worse, and something worse. And I'm tired of seeing what it does to people's lives. I had one friend, and he started on pornography when he was a teenager. And I've heard teenagers say, well, we'll probably all have this problem until we get married. That's a very stupid thing to say. One, don't keep having that problem if you have that problem. Jesus gave the solution. He said, if your eye offends you, what? Pluck it out. If your hand offends you, cut it off. If you're not behaving yourself with your computer or your cell phone or your internet connection, get rid of it. Well, but that's important to me. Well, so is a right hand. So is an eye. But Jesus said, be willing to get rid of that. Then your whole body going to hell. But the problem is, and I've heard young men say, we'll have this problem until we get married. A, don't keep having the problem. B, don't think that marriage means that problem is going to go away. So many young women have married young men that they thought were going to be Christians and do what's right. And then they find out, in fact, one young lady said a while back, a Christian young lady who knew different young ladies married to young men, in the church, and she said, none of my friends female friends, none of them are happy in their marriage. That's sad. You know why? For one thing, they thought they were marrying men, and they found out they married boys. And they thought they were marrying somebody who would be true to them, and they found out they're married to somebody addicted to pornography. Promise Keepers, you remember that organization? I don't know, was it 10, 15, 20 years ago? I don't remember. But it was a real popular movement, and it was among kind of denominational circles, and they would get men to make a commitment. I'm going to be there for my wife. I'm going to be there for my kids. Promise Keepers. They did a survey. They asked them how many of them had downloaded pornography in the past 6 weeks. Of these men promising how much they're going to be there for the families, what do you think the percentage was? Of the religious men, Promise Keepers, you know how many of them had downloaded pornography in the last few weeks? 54%. If you have this problem, you gotta get rid of it. It's destructive. It's debasing. It debases you. It's debasing of women. It's evil. It's corrupt. Just because we live in a culture that allows it doesn't mean that God allows it. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, turn there with me. You've heard, I'm in verse 27, Matthew 5, verse 27. You've heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you, everyone that looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery already with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out, cast it from you. It is profitable for you that one of your members perish and not your whole body be cast into hell. If your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and cast it from you. For it's profitable for you that one of your members should perish and not your whole body go into hell. And not only is it addictive, but it gets worse and worse. And so I've dealt with people who... One friend of mine, he'd been involved, as I said, like since a teenager. He got married. He continued having problems and stuff. And then at one point, I found out he's leaving his wife and he's moving to California. And I called and I told him, I said, basically, that your life is not going to be as torn up and wasteful as it's going to come, that it's going to get even worse for you. And he said, I have to see where this is going to go. His son, his 16-year-old son, you know, most 16-year-old boys have some chores in the house, right? You know what his son's job was in the house? Keep dad off internet porn. That was one of his responsibilities as a 16-year-old. But there was some woman, and she's going to be in California, and so he's leaving his wife and his kids, and he's going to California. And he went, and then I think the woman apparently wanted nothing to do with him. He ended up in a psychiatric ward. He ended up eventually going back to his wife and repenting. Not long after that, died as a fairly young man. The week before he died, he was talking to another young man, and he said, don't waste your life on internet pornography. On pornography in general. That's what he did with his life. He wasted it. Another case where, well, I don't want to get too graphic, but people end up in jail. People end up doing violent acts because they, after a while, this isn't enough. And so they go to this. And then that's not enough. So they go to this. And then that's not enough. And they go to this. And sooner or later, they get into violent things where they're hurting people or potentially killing people and other things. Fathers, take this, mothers, take this really seriously as regards our children. Don't just our kids don't need smartphones as, you know, as little children. They don't need to be, the pornography industry makes more money than the NBA. They make more money than the big television networks. They make more money than the NFL. They're making lots of money destroying a lot of lives, and they target. Don't let that happen to your kids. And husbands or wives, if this is a problem in your life, you've just got to get it out and get back to a healthy relationship and get rid of this. Job 31, verse 1. You know, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look on a maiden. And besides the adultery in the heart, there's adultery outside of the heart in the actual act. Thou shalt not commit adultery. And I don't know why my fonts are all messed up there, but they are. We're going to read these passages in a minute as we close, but first I want to go through this. When we get married, there needs to be boundaries. There needs to be boundaries for us and for other people, and young people in particular. I want you all to think about this. Because statistically, if we just act like the world, if we don't take our cues from the Word of God and we just act like the world, then you know what the chances are that your marriage is going to last statistically? 50-50. Because in our country, about half of marriages are breaking up. And then of those that do break up, and then they marry again, you know what their odds of staying together are? Only 1 out of 3. And then if they marry again, you know what the odds of their staying together are? Only 1 out of 4. So statistically, if you're just looking at our culture, half of marriages break up. Second marriages, about 66% of them break up. Third marriages, 75%. There's a high chance if you just pick somebody because he's cute or she's pretty or she's popular or he's got a cool car and you're not looking at the character, there's a real strong chance they're going to end up cheating on you. Pick somebody that loves you, but more importantly than that, pick somebody that loves God. Because, and married people, are there going to be some times in life where we're irritated with that other person? Or there's some problems? Yes. And when we love God more than ourselves and more than our spouse, our love of God causes us to do what? It causes us to make the apologies that we need to make. It causes us to make the changes that we need to make. It causes our spouse to make the apologies and changes they need to make, and it brings the marriage back to where it should be. But if you pick somebody that doesn't love God, you can kind of ignore how much they tell you they love you, because it won't take very long at all for that to just go away for them. When you get married, let your marriage be something to secure. Fence it in. And respect the boundaries in these different ways. For instance, clothing. There should be ways that your husband should be able to see you that nobody else should be able to see you, or your wife to see you that nobody else does. Don't wear clothing that's advertising yourself for other people. Communication, compliments. It can be very direct, because here's the thing. Young people, understand this. After you get married, the fact that you honor your marriage doesn't mean other people are. So there will be women that are at work where your husband works, and they're not going to care about that ring on his finger. They're not going to care that he made vows to you. Unless you mean it, and unless he means it, they're going to do everything they can to break through that. So they're going to wear things to get his attention. They're going to say things to get his attention. Sometimes it'll be very direct. Like, you remember what his Potiphar's wife saying to Joseph? Jesus is pretty blunt. Lie with me. But lots of times it doesn't start off that blunt. We're going to read from Proverbs 5 in a minute, and it talks about the evil woman. Her words are like honey. And so your husband's at work, and she's just laying those honey words on him. You know, it works the other way, too. There have been a lot of preachers and elders that have gotten themselves in trouble. You know why? They started off trying to help somebody. And maybe a woman is in a difficult marriage or having some problems, and she says to one of the elders, or she says to the preacher, say, oh, can I talk to you? And instead of honoring the boundaries and saying, sure, my wife and I will be over, he thinks, I'm an elder, I'm a preacher, I can handle this. And so the conversation starts going like this. And she says, well, you know, this is difficult and this is difficult. And guess what the preacher or elder or another brother is doing? Guess what he's doing? He's listening to her problems. You know what most wives' complaints about their husband? It's that he doesn't listen very well, right? Here's a man that's listening to her problems. Not only is he listening to her problems, but he's starting to what? Empathize with her and feel for her. And he says, oh, I'm so sorry you're going through that. What starts happening in her heart? That's what she wishes she was hearing from her husband that she's not. So now she starts saying things like, oh, your wife is so lucky. You know, she must be so happy. You know, I wish my husband were more like you. You're so kind and you're so, and everything else. And this fella is not there to hear the compliments. He was there to help, but guess what he starts noticing? I'm getting some attention here and I'm getting some respect. And the more she talks about how lucky her husband, his wife is, and I wish my husband were more like you, that starts playing strings on her heart and on his. Because when he goes home, when he walks in the door, his wife doesn't say, oh, I'm so lucky you're back. You know, she's saying, I thought you said you were going to mow the grass today. And so he starts kind of looking forward to that counseling session with her. And you see what starts happening? You start getting emotional bond. One friend of mine that was an elder, he said, I was arrogant. I thought, this can't happen to me. Now, he stopped the relationship before it could have gone further than it could have, but it went far enough to cause all sorts of trouble and harm and hurt. Respect the boundaries. Don't do that. Contact. We're going to read in Proverbs 5. You know, why should you embrace that woman over there? Companionship, closeness, imagination. Too many people live in fantasy worlds outside of themselves, wishing that they were a celebrity, wishing they were somebody else, imagining some other woman, imagining some other man. Stop it. Your life is your life. Enjoy your life. Enjoy your spouse. Build up your marriage. Don't pretend that you're somebody else or wish they were somebody else or in your mind be thinking about somebody else. That's horrible. Be your marriage. Make that stronger in love, desire, and loyalty. And if you don't respect boundaries in these things and you start getting more of a companionship with some other man than your husband or some other woman than your wife, don't be surprised if what, even before a physical affair, an emotional affair can start happening. If you're not watching how you dress and how you talk and just the time that you spend around, we've got, you know, the whole Me Too movement and everything. There's been, besides at Hollywood and elsewhere, there's been some just despicable men that have just used and abused women and done horrible things. And I'm glad for them to get fired, and probably some of them need to go to prison. But our same culture has made fun of our vice president. You know why? He won't go to dinner alone with another woman. Good for him. And I've seen people in print act like that's insulting, and acts like the only thing that prevents men from misbehaving is witnesses. No, but it's wise to put up boundaries. Men are men and women are women. And why should a married man go somewhere with a married woman alone for dinner together? I think that's wisdom. So if we're not doing these things, we're breaking down the boundary. And then some really ugly things can start happening. Then you can find yourself in a situation where you're wishing you weren't married. And you're wishing you were married to that person. I know one situation where the woman is wishing she could be married to somebody else, and she actually said to her husband, "If you loved me, you would commit adultery." So distraught. Don't break down those boundaries. Maintain those boundaries. Hebrews 13:4, let marriage be had in honor among all. Back in Malachi, the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth. She is your companion and your wife. By covenant. Thank you. That'll be a good stopping point for us today. Let us honor marriage. For fornicators and adulterers, the text says, God will judge. Let's strengthen our marriages. And let's guide our children so they pick people that love the Lord. Thank you very much for your attention. If you are subject to the invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?